Hello, and welcome to Talman Talks, a KSB podcast focused on highlighting the great things happening in the world of education in Kansas. In each episode of Talman Talks, we'll delve into the triumphs, challenges, and innovative ideas that are shaping the educational landscape across our state. We'll sit down with hosts Mark Talman and Scott Rothschild, and the occasional guest, to hear how Kansas education is making a difference, one classroom at a time.
This is Mark Talman. This is our Talman Talk podcast. And as we get into the habit of doing these, sometimes I'll be doing a lot of the talking, and other times, like today, I'll mostly be asking questions. And today, we're going to be focusing on what the state of Kansas is doing around improving reading and literacy, and particularly early literacy. We've got two fantastic guests today that are going to help you understand that. I'm simply going to let them introduce themselves, a little bit about who they are, their current job, how they got there, and then we'll kind of plunge into what's happening in the state of Kansas. So, Dr. Lori Curtis, let's start with you, and then we'll turn to Jerry Powers. Tell us a little bit about yourselves, Lori.
All right. My name is Lori Curtis, like he said, and I am the Early Literacy Dyslexia Program Manager at KSDE. My background is actually an elementary teacher. I was in the elementary classroom for 15 years, mainly teaching in preschool through second grade. And I then was on faculty at Kansas State University, ending up as the director of the Reading Specialist Program there. And I was there for about 14 years. And the reason I am in this position is because I heard Dr. Watson at KSDE talk about a position that would really look at moving the state's direction on preschool through higher ed, everyone understanding how we need to work together to increase literacy across the state. And I think that's the only way we're going to make a big difference, is to get everyone on the same page in reading instruction. So I started to work at KSDE as this program manager a year ago last December. So been there about a year and a half.
And we appreciate your coming on, and we had suggested that you find someone with both some experience and currently working in the field. And so you nominated our other guest today, if you want to look for someone to blame. Jerry, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Good morning. My name, like you said, is Jerry Powers, and I am they've given me a new title, so I'm the District Literacy Specialist for DeSoto, and that's kindergarten through 12th grade. But over two decades of my work has been in elementary with K through 5 in the DeSoto School District at a couple different elementary schools, but I ended at Prairie Ridge. And before that, I was a third grade teacher for a few years. And what really changed my trajectory and got me very interested in literacy, a couple things. One, watching my three sons and how they were growing and changing and seeing it from a different perspective than what I saw in the classroom. Became just fascinated with that. But then in 2008, when I was honored as Kansas Teacher of the Year, that opened up so many opportunities. And the topic of dyslexia had always interested me and intrigued me. And those opportunities that are still continuing today, which is why I was even on the Dyslexia Task Force. So it's been a real blessing to be able to learn and grow and then work with people like Dr. Curtis.
Well, that is a great place to begin, because while, as we were talking about before we started, we've been talking about reading and teaching reading for a long, long time, but I think many of the things that are now going on to sort of organized efforts do go back to that Dyslexia Task Force, which came about actually as a result of legislation. And some legislators, I think, were frustrated. And a lot of it was around issues of dyslexia, hearing from parents of children with dyslexia who were concerned about what was happening in schools. And really, there was an effort to, I think, bring everyone to the table and set up a task force to talk about changes. So if you were on that, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience there, and if you can kind of think back and remember, maybe summarize a little bit, what were the recommendations that they made that has ultimately helped lead to many of the things that are happening today in at the state level and in schools?
Well, one of the first things that really became very clear to me is that it was about dyslexia, but it was about so much more. I went into it thinking we're going to talk about dyslexia and what we need to do differently and how we need to approach instruction for those students. And I felt really comfortable in that realm. But it really became about what all students need. And that was a little bit new to me. And I appreciate it because I learned a lot from the people at that table. But it was not easy because you had to face a lot of things that I was doing that I needed to change a little bit. I noticed quickly that there was a lot of deep frustration among parents and others in the room about change. So it wasn't a comfortable process, but I learned a lot and I grew a lot through that. It really broadened my understanding of what we needed to do. And so out of that, Dr. Curtis can help me because it was around higher ed and what they needed to do differently, which I strongly agree with. The other one was around professional development for teachers, which we have to have. It was also around strong materials, structured literacy being the foundation. I think that was all four.
And universal screening.
How could I forget that? Universal screening, which all of those sound very cut and dried, but the intricacies of each one of those is a very challenging, I guess I'd say, a challenging process to get it all coordinated across our state.
And as I recall, the group worked for about a year developing mm-hmm. recommendations, and then it became time to talk about how those would be implemented at different levels. One thing in particular, and I remember from working in the legislature, that was the idea that there needed to be a focal point at KSDE.
Yes.
And for several years, there was a kind of every year in the legislature, there was a debate over funding the dyslexia coordinator mm-hmm. position, and with the idea that there really needed to be someone in charge to help usher those four things in. I think that's where we come to you, Lori. Do you want to talk about both kind of how you got into that role from the experiences that you had before, why you were interested, and then maybe kind of touch a little bit on what we're doing now, kind of highlight those four things, and then we'll dig into a little bit more about some of the things around structured literacy and some of the other things that means. But how did we get to where we are and sketch out kind of the plan that really you're trying to implement with the help of a lot of other people?
Absolutely. Well, I think the thing that brought me to this position was because I had been that classroom teacher and I understood that frustration of having those students that struggle to read in your classroom. But I'd also been on the higher ed side too, and I understood some of the challenges of that work. And so that brought me to this position. But I would not be able to do what I'm doing had it not been KSDE allowing me to choose other people throughout the state with certain expertise to help me do what I need to do to help teachers and kids. So one of the things that they did is in this program manager position is allow me to select some people throughout the state. And those are called teacher leader consultants. They're part-time employees of KSDE. And I very carefully chose those. Jerry is one of those. We also have Melissa Bruner, who is a former speech-language pathologist with a solid background, works in assessment and teaching and learning in her district. We have a second grade teacher who's an award-winning teacher. We have Casey Piney, who has also done a lot of work with MTSS and is working in her district, and Amy Bybee, who's an assistant superintendent, who also helps in this work. And she has been a letters facilitator and has worked in a couple of districts. So those five people are helping me in the work that we are doing, and a lot of that is outlined in the recommendations from the Dyslexia Task Force. They're spelled out in the Dyslexia Handbook. But also we were able to bring on five teachers throughout the state. So we have five field educators that also help, and they are everywhere from in the Manhattan area out to almost the Colorado border, Wichita area, Kansas City, all across the state, and they also help provide professional learning, and we meet together every couple of weeks to make sure that we're in line with the work that we need to be doing. So that has allowed me to, I feel, do what the agency has asked me to do in this position. And as far as those ideas that were brought forth from the Dyslexia Task Force, I do work with higher education, work with the unit heads and have conversations with those, and I'm one person who does do some of that program review as they bring up new programs that they want to have students take. We look at those standards and we look at what they are doing, and there is an assurance form from all of the institutions in the state about how they're infusing the science of reading into their coursework. So I have that work, as well as the K-12 professional learning that Jerry and the field educators and the other TLCs help with. And then all of us work together for the universal screening piece, and we're constantly in conversation about high-quality instructional materials and the value of structured literacy.
So let's take a minute to, I guess, talk about the scope of the what is the problem? I mean, what is the scope of the problem? Because I am old enough to remember. Why can't Johnny read was either a book or a phrase that we were talking about, I think, maybe I heard my parents talking about in the 60s. This issue, you know, has been around a long time, this question of, and I think we sometimes still hear that. Well, can kids read? Are they literate? Are they on grade level? And, you know, you've got some people arguing we've got a real problem. You've got other people maybe saying, well, we're doing pretty well. So both from the perspective, maybe from the state view, and then maybe talking a little bit, what are we talking about here? I mean, how many kids struggle with dyslexia, maybe is a place to start, and how does that translate into kids who maybe are just struggling to read? Is that the same thing? Help me understand a little bit in our listeners about the scope of the, why are we trying to do these things? What's the problem? What's behind it, and how will we know if we're doing better? If that's a good place to start. Who wants to jump in on that?
I'll start, and then I'll let Jerry go on. So part of it is dyslexia isn't an uncommon problem. 7 to 20% of kids, you can look at different research, you'll have different numbers. So those students are in our classrooms. A lot of what happens as a child learns to read is invisible. We are looking at research and practitioner understanding of what we think's happening, but now we have better understanding because we have more brain research, we have magnetic MRI imaging studies that can help inform that, so we understand better about what's happening. So it's important that we look at what we would call the science of reading, which is that body of knowledge that helps inform what's happening in a child's brain as they're learning to read. And then the tricky part then is, right, putting it into practice. I just heard coming in today, I was listening to a different podcast, and the person there said information doesn't mean transformation. So I think there's a lot of good information we need, but we need to figure out how to implement it and put it into the classroom. So I think part of the problem is that often when children learn to read, it feels like it's just magic. It just happens. And until we really understand what's happening in the brain and the eyes, and as all of this loop is being optimized so kids can take print off of a book and put it into making meaning, until we really understand the science behind that, what we think is happening hasn't always been what was happening. And so we thought, if we just surrounded children for many years with great books and we helped them love reading and we read to them, that was enough. They would just pick this up. The more we allowed them to practice, they were just going to pick these skills and strategies up. But what we've learned is that for a lot of kids, that doesn't work. It works for some. They can pick it up quickly with just some minimal instruction, but learning to read isn't like language. We aren't just wired to do that. It takes instruction. And for kids that struggle with dyslexia, it takes very intentional, systematic, explicit instruction, and that needs to happen to optimize their opportunity to learn to read. But another thing you mentioned is that not all students that struggle to read have dyslexia. So luckily we have some assessments we can do to help understand what is happening now, And then change our instruction to enhance for the best educational outcome for kids.
And I think that is really, everything Lori has said has been my experience. And so for the past 25 years, I knew what students who struggle needed. Where I was misinformed or misunderstood was that that was good for all students. But even though we now have a lot more information, and I've been through all the letters training, and I facilitate that training in our district, what we thought is that as more teachers began to understand this science, that these miracles would happen. That now we have this knowledge and this science, we are going to see 95% of our kids right on grade level. And that's not been the experience, because it really goes back to, and we've been told this for decades, it's the teacher. And what classroom teachers have to do, that art of weaving good instruction, because I know this student and I know that student and I know what's going on with them at home, and I know that they're anxious or that they struggle to pay attention. All those nuances, that's the art. And so you do have to have really well-informed teachers, and you do have to have really quality materials, but you have to have that human element. And so teaching kids to read is complex. You can do all the right things in the manual, and one teacher will get more gains than the other because of the relationship many times that you build. That's huge. And kids who struggle, you have to build a relationship with them. That's their lifeline. And I think that we need to not lose sight of the fact that teaching children to read is complex. And not just anyone can do it. And it's not just, well, we used to hand them a Dick and Jane book. It's like, that's a misunderstanding of the complexity. And just because you learned it easily doesn't mean it's easy. And children who struggle, many of them, we're talking a long time of coming alongside them and helping them. And for some, it's a short amount of time. But the assessment process, to me, is what's helped me the most. I don't care if it's an ESL student, it's a student on an IEP, it's a student that walked in the door and I know nothing about them. Those informal assessments after the screener are what really help you to know, what do I do tomorrow? And what do I do the next day? And what do I keep doing to move this child to their full potential in literacy?
So one of the things that we have been talking quite a bit about here at KASB, well, at least I have. I've been trying to look at issues around, like, our state assessments, for example, looking at reading scores, trying to talk about, you know, a couple things stand out. One is just the ongoing gaps between lower-income kids, higher-income kids, different sets of advantages, children with disabilities, you know, which could include dyslexia, right? Could be in that, which would explain you're identifying a child who has a problem. But I guess what I'm interested, if you can comment on a little bit, is, again, our audience here are largely around school board members, school leaders. What are some of the reasons that a child will struggle? Obviously, dyslexia may be a, you know, maybe you need to explain a little bit more about why they have a different experience of learning to read. What are some of the other factors, and what are the important things that we can do to help overcome those? Can you talk about that a little bit?
I will start. One of the things that research is showing us now, and is fascinating to me, is the importance of us understanding early language for children, birth to five. Because we know that a child that comes with a strong, solid understanding of oral vocabulary is going to have an easier time learning to read. And so looking at opportunities that children have to really engage in a lot of rich vocabulary building and oral language before they even enter school is critical. So And that doesn't have to mean that they are read to hours and hours. It means, are they engaging in conversations where there's discourse, where it goes back and forth, and are they having experiences where they can gain vocabulary? Because another thing that we have learned is that content understanding, background knowledge, vocabulary, all of that plays such an important role as kids get older and texts get more complex, that they have that background knowledge and understanding to draw on. So when they read, they're understanding, because it isn't, there's decoding where we take print off of a page, but that has to be partnered with that understanding and making meaning and having vocabulary. So one thing I would just add is just encouraging that rich oral vocabulary before kids even enter school, which is the reason why we really do see value in, you know, high quality early childhood programs that are happening.
And when I look at our kindergartners who come in, it's that birth to five. If they come in really behind in their language, or they have no understanding of letters, letter names, letter sounds, they have none of that, you aren't just starting with a five-year-old in kindergarten. You might be starting with a two-year-old. And that makes it really urgent for teachers to focus their instruction so intently on those skills that we know need to be developed. And it makes it very difficult to help those children catch up because they are already so behind in their language. And we have a complex language when you start to put it all together. It's not a crazy language, but it is complex. And so I know in our district we have an early childhood center, and I think that's something we need to focus more across the state, is looking at what does every district have in place for that early childhood, because that's where you make a difference. That impacts them all the way through elementary and on. It starts them out on the right path. It's critical.
And so is that why, you know, we sort of talked about those four things that came out of the task force and the four things you're looking at, you know, so one of them is screening. And so is the point of that, as soon as possible, to try to identify where a child is, whether it's an issue of dyslexia or whether it's simply the I guess, environment they may have come from, not giving them some of the skills. Is that why that's the first point? And then that is what allows you to then hopefully have a better prepared set of educators to respond to the different levels that kids are at?
Exactly. That assessment is what guides the next step. So early identification is really critical for students who have characteristics of dyslexia. They need to have that intentional instruction right away on letters and sounds and working through that process of taking print and associating with meaning. And so the fact that we really just start early, and that early assessment piece to guide what we do when we first start during the school year is important, which is why we ask that screening occur 3 times a year to see if what you have decided to do is working, and if not, what do we do about that? And that progress monitoring that continues is important. But early assessment and intervention is really important.
And I think that's what's maybe the difficult part, is that we do the assessing, but you got to talk about it. You've got to sit down and look at, are we dealing with a system-wide problem here, or are we dealing with just a few students that need extra support? But it's that problem-solving process. That's where I see the breakdown currently, is we've got the data. We got to look at it. And moving past simple solutions, like, well, our children don't get help at home, or our students came in low, what are we supposed to do? And you really have to think about what we can change here, and what we can change here is really focused, intentional instruction and building those relationships with kids. And if you just do the screener and say, well, that's what the state told us to do, nothing changes. And it's those hard conversations that are hard. They're right. Hard to have, because you can work so hard to help kids, and then you're looking at your progress monitoring and they're not where you want them to be. So you kind of lick your wounds for a little bit, and then you go, we got to tweak this. What do we need to change? Who can we talk to that could help us think this through? And you keep trying again. But if you don't have assessment, you don't know to tweak what you're doing. You don't know to change direction. You just go by your subjective feelings, which are not totally research-based, you know. And so that's where I've been putting a lot of my energy in our district into. We've got to really look at this data and not make assumptions.
And I'm going to just add, teachers also need time to look at that data. They have it. They need the time to really have those conversations and the opportunity to look. Their plates are very full with instruction. They need to make sure that that time's protected.
Something I'm curious about, because so I'm not an educator at all, but as I kind of think back on things, you were talking about the importance of, well, does a student come to school with a certain set of skills? Have we over the decades changed sort of the expectations? I guess I can hear some people saying, well, you know, isn't it the school's job to teach you letters and sounds and things like that? But you're kind of saying, gosh, a child really needs a certain set of things before they get there. And certainly I know the experience of my own children, now my grandchildren. You know, boy, if they're in a preschool program, all I'm hearing about is, you know, what a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old is learning. I guess I don't really remember my kindergarten experience, but I guess my assumption was that's when it began. So what's maybe changed? Why is early childhood education more important than it was, or is it? Or has something changed in what society does or expects of our schools or our preschools or our parents?
I'm going to jump in and go back to oral language. Just opportunities for kids to talk with adults and to build language structures. Sometimes our kids are really busy and they're on their way to soccer practice and they're here, and our language sometimes is quite demand or command driven. Do this, take this, open this package, and we're going through the drive-through on the way to soccer, right? So to really intentionally have opportunities to build on oral language, or possibly when our kids weren't quite so busy, maybe we had more opportunities around home to have that done, as well as technology has changed, I think, what happens in a lot of homes. When a child's in front of even a really wonderful educational program, that's receptive. They're getting language, but they're not producing language, and both of those are needed to really build those language structures that will help with reading. So I think there's several issues. It's not just one thing or another, but giving kids fun opportunities, even if that's just right around the home, and doing a lot of oral language building with conversations and reading books at the public library, all of those are great language builders.
And I remember Tabitha Rossbroy, who was a Kansas Teacher of the Year, also National Teacher of the Year. She talks a lot from her early childhood experience about play is the work of children.
Yes.
And I think that is critical. And I think through COVID, what we experienced through all of the anxiety was a lot of parents trying to get by, they're trying to work, they've got kids at home. And it was a time of struggle for all of us. And one of the things we've noticed in our district is it's just this year that we saw our third grade students across the district doing well on the state assessment. But if you think back, those were those little babies coming into us. And it's taken a lot of very intentional and broad work, because you're not just developing their ability, like you'd said, Lori, to read the words on the page. It's that language piece. And we do know that during COVID, children weren't getting nearly as much give and take conversation. And it's critical. And if you watch some parents with their young children, they just naturally, they do things that they won't even tell you they know they're doing. They ask a lot of questions. They allow their 1 or 2 year old to problem solve. You're going to get this, just try again. Well, the more stressed your family structure is, the more you're just trying to get by and keep going, the less energy capacity you have for that kind of parenting, because it requires, well, all of us that are parents know, that requires a lot of emotional restraint, and that's a difficult thing to do, and you have to be very intentional. And a lot of our children miss that, and particularly during COVID, they miss that, and it's taking a while to get that back.
So, talking about our personal history, and Dr. Curtis and I talked about this a little bit, what I try to remember from when I was a child, my mother had studied to be an elementary school teacher. She didn't actually teach. I guess I and my siblings maybe were enough of a handful. But I remember as a child hearing her talk, maybe one of those, you know, interactions that you talk about that was so important, talking about phonics and talking about controversies over phonics. And so I can say, I can remember, you know, for 50 years sort of hearing about phonics and are we doing enough, are we not doing enough? And we haven't mentioned that yet, so, and maybe this is a little bit of a segue, because I know you want to talk a little bit about structured literacy and what it is and what it is. Maybe for some of our viewers who are not our viewers, our listeners, for people who are maybe not educators but have kind of heard about some of the reading war controversy, talk to us a little bit about what's going on there, and then maybe how that leads into what we're trying to do now, at least from your point, to improve our outcomes.
Phonics is important, but it's just a piece. It's that linking of letters to sound guided by the rules and the generalizations that we can use based on what our language asks for. But it is just a piece. And in order for that instruction, phonics instruction, to be optimal, kids need to understand language and the sounds of their language as what they hear before they ever are really asked to put that into a letter or a grapheme. So I think when people think of phonics, they think a very structured thing that occurs at a certain grade level for a long period of time and very regimented, and doesn't have to be that, but it's a piece of a good literacy program in a school. So the wars, I hope, are over now that we understand more about the science of reading and what happens. So when we can talk more about structured literacy and that understanding of sounds and letters and the morphology and the rules that go about putting all of that together and putting sentences together, it's very important. But there's a lot more to literacy than just phonics.
Well, because you've got language comprehension. Yeah. So the blend that teachers have to create is where you have students who are accurate readers. So that comes from phonemic awareness, it comes from phonics. But they have to understand what they read, because that's the goal of sounding anything out. That's the goal of being able to decode, is so that you can comprehend, and comprehend at really deep levels so that you can be very analytical and you can be very thoughtful in your ability to think and make judgments and converse with other people intelligently. And so it's that blending of both of those that makes it extremely complex in a classroom. Because, well, here's an example. In our district, we look at our universal screening scores, and what we're noticing, even when we're using very explicit, focused, intentional programs, we have kids that are good decoders. They can read accurately, but their reading fluency, particularly their reading rate, very, very slow. And that impacts your comprehension, because you're still focusing on reading and decoding, and you don't have a whole lot of mental capacity left to really think and then to think deeply. So there isn't this flow chart that if you follow it exactly the way they say it, you are going to have perfection in the end. It is a science and it is an art, and it comes from ongoing progress monitoring, and then for teachers who are smarter than their materials to know what they need to tweak, when they need to tweak it, and to be willing to do that on a very regular, consistent basis, and then look at the data again and problem solve deeply to really make yourself vulnerable to talk about what you've been doing and what you might need to do differently. It's a very difficult process. So when you see a teacher who does it really well, I don't think enough people appreciate the skill, just the unbelievable talent in that person to be able to blend the science and the art together to help children not only be accurate, but to be fluent and to be able to talk about and become a truly literate person and on that path to continuing to grow.
So you've both really stressed that it's all got to come back to the teacher working with the child to
Absolutely.
Do that. So what is it that school leaders, school boards, administrators, supportive parents and communities, what can they do, what should they be doing now to expand the number of teachers, I guess, who can do this great work? What do they need in the classroom that our school systems can provide and should be looking at, should be evaluating?
I will say one of the most important things I feel that can occur is for us to elevate the time and quality of professional learning that teachers undergo, that time is increased as best it can be to really give them the opportunity to not just get the information, but to be mentored and coached as they're making changes in their classroom, that there is the time and the energy available to do that hard work. It isn't a sit and get situation. It isn't just giving teachers a day at the beginning of the year to learn all they need to know about structured literacy. It will take time and opportunity to implement and then come back and what worked and what didn't and come alongside someone to help them troubleshoot and solve those problems to get better. So it isn't a quick fix, but what school leaders and districts, in my opinion, can do is to elevate that value and importance and funding, I guess, for professional learning for our teachers, and then also to support them in getting the best materials they can to use with students.
And it really is that ongoing job embedded. For new teachers coming in, they've gone from being a college student to being a CEO of a little company, and it's a lot. And then, to be real honest, our culture, our society, truly doesn't honor teachers. And so I think a lot of young people think, well, I don't want to be a teacher. I don't make very much money, and nobody seems to respect it very much. And my caution to our culture is, if we don't elevate this profession, we are going to be in a really, really difficult place. And we're already there. When I look at the number of teachers that resigned from my district just last week, there aren't a lot of people banging on the door to come in. And I think our society needs to wake up. I think our legislators need to look a little more deeply than just schools are failing. I think that's a real low level of problem solving. I don't think it's accurate. And I think it's not helping the situation, and it makes good people who are working really hard feel so undervalued that they leave, and there aren't very many coming in. And I think we all can agree that's not good for our children.
So let me maybe ask a little harder question than around that, because it seems to me what we hear a lot of is, you know, we we need to be more supportive of the profession. We need to support our teachers doing a difficult job, recognize the success of our schools. But at the same time, we're saying, if we want different results, we're going to have to do some things differently, and that can be hard. We need to provide the time for teachers to learn how to do things different. How do we balance that message of the, the need or the urgency to change without it coming across as criticism? How do we talk about the need to get better without it being viewed as saying you're failing? Because I think you're wanting to say, well, we don't think we're failing, but you're both sitting here saying this is a really tough challenge, and many mm-hmm. kids aren't getting what they need. Help us balance that message. Reflect on that a little bit.
Jerry's talked about reading is complex, and I think the solutions for any of this is going to be a very collaborative effort. So it isn't telling someone what they need to change or, only looking at the data, but offering solutions to. How do I come alongside you? How do I support what you're doing? Let me help you achieve this goal. Because it is, it's going to take a lot of collaborative work. From families, from school leaders, all the way through, so that as we say, look at our data and say we need to make some changes, that's not a punitive thing. That is a way of looking at it and saying, wow, I thought what I was doing was really working. I need to reflect on that. We all need to be reflective. You're looking at two people who used guided reading over the years. We had to stop and say, you know what? What I thought at the time was working in the best way to instruct children, you know what, I need to realize that wasn't, and I need to change. And so I think it's going to take a lot of reflection on all of us, and not to look at things in a punitive way, but a way to offer solutions.
And I think it's also for our society to look at, this is a collective problem, that schools are the recipient of children. They come to us the way they are, and we love them, and we teach them. But we didn't create some of the struggles. And so one of the things many teachers across the state will tell you is that the behaviors they're experiencing are extremely more pronounced than they used to be. And several teachers that I know left our district, they're like, I don't know how to handle this. A lot of children, very dysregulated. They struggle with problem solving. They struggle with controlling their big emotions. And so I look at the number of support that teachers have in a building. There's not that much. So if you have just a couple children who really struggle emotionally, that can be so disruptive in your classroom. And that's not the teacher's fault. That's what society has handed to them, and they are doing the very best they can. So I think when we talk about some of the things that need to be improved, part of the complexity of that is looking beyond the schoolhouse, as what's going on in there isn't enough. And I think as a society, we've got to reach way outside of that and say, how do we help families? How can we really provide supports to families who are doing their best and trying to get by, but they need help. Their children need help.
Well, yeah, those are the things that I think we continually face is certainly as I've last year spent a lot of time talking to school leaders and educators, and one of the things that those themes of the growing issues of behavior and regulation and anxiety and all of those things that kids are dealing with, that they bring to school, so you're both having to deal with all of that, and then the additive work,
yes,
of the new skills that school was originally supposed to do in the first place was the expectation. And I guess that goes back a little bit to my sense of, historically, well, what was the school supposed to do? Reading, writing, and arithmetic. So, two of the three are what you guys are supposedly dealing with, needing to deal with. There wasn't the idea that the school also had to sort of teach behavior and regulation, all of that. Maybe we just didn't want to admit that at the time, but that certainly isn't that, you know, get back to the basics kind of thing. But those do seem to be realities that we're dealing with. If anyone needs more help or information about any of these issues, where can they go?
Absolutely. If they even just search in a search engine, KSDE or Kansas Dyslexia, I think my name will pop up. But they can certainly reach out to me at the Kansas State Department of Education. If they search for dyslexia, they will find the page. And on that page, there is a lot of information, additional information, as well as the dyslexia handbook, which is being revised right now. Should be ready to go and be replaced August 1st with our updated screening information. So they can certainly look me up at Kansas State Department of Education.
So I think we'll just conclude by saying, if you are interested in these issues, if you have questions, or if you're basically saying, "What, boy, I'd like to help us get better again," not from I think we're failing, but how can we get better? How can we help those students? There's a lot of resources to do that. The state has put this kind of program in place, but it will only be successful if it's actually implemented at the lower level. So with that, I will thank both of you for your time today, for the work you've done. I will note that I posted earlier a blog that's available on our KSD website that has a lot of, not that the writing in it is so brilliant, but that it has links to much of this information and a little bit of the history behind all this. So thank you very much, and I want to thank Alec Madrigal, as always, for putting and producing this together, and I will hope to be visiting with you all soon with another Tallman Talks in the future.